Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 20th day of July, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. Take a look at the cash grain segment with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Discuss the weather forecast with the guys at Earth Risk Technology and take up Prevent Plant with Gary Schnitke. It's part of the ag program and service that comes to you from willag.org and Illinois Public Media. Stay with us for the next half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago. On this Monday afternoon, corn futures were down 15 and a quarter cents at $4 and a nickel. December at 4.16 were down 15 and a quarter. And the March at 4.26 and a quarter in the corn pit, 15 and a quarter cents lower. July down 14 and a half at 4.36 and three quarters. Next year's December, a dime lower at $4.19 and a quarter. August soybeans were 7 cents lower at $10.07 and three quarters. September at 9.98 and a quarter, down 7 and a half. And November beans 9.99 and a half, down 7 and a quarter. January 7 and a quarter lower, $10 a nickel and a half, and next year's March at $10 and a quarter of a cent, down 7. The November beans of 16 at $9.49 and a half, down 4 and 3 quarters. Bean meal off $5.10 at 356, and the bean oil at 31.68, a dime lower. Soft red winter wheat down 21 and a quarter in the lead September at 532 and 3 quarters. July of next year down 19 cents at 557 and a quarter. September hard red at 525 and a half, down 21, and next year's July down 20 and a half at $5.74 and a half. Live cattle futures in the August up a nickel at 146.70. October at 149.7 and a half. They were 5 cents lower on the day. August feeder cattle up 92 and a half cents at 216.12 and a half. The September at $214.57 and a half cents, $1.15 higher in lean hogs for the day, down 77 and a half cents. In the August contract for 100 pounds at $74.90. October down 27 and a half at $63.17 and a half. You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, in Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil at $49.97 a barrel now, down below 50 bucks, 92 cents lower for the day. Ethanol at $1.52 and 8 cents, that's 2 and 4 tenths of a cent lower. Gasoline on the RBOB at $1.92 and 7 cents. The wholesale price just about even for the afternoon. And heating oil or diesel fuel down a penny at $1.65 and 4 cents. Natural gas today at $2.82 and 8 cents, 4 and 2 tenths of a cent lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 41 points at 18,038. The U.S. dollar trading at 98.17 is up 0.186, and gold futures on the day at $1,106.50, holding above $1,100 at $25.40 lower on the morning, or rather the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. A 20% chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy this afternoon, a high of 86 on a west-southwest wind at 3 to 6. That will jump to 30% chance this evening, all before 1 a.m., partly cloudy and a low of 66. Tomorrow, beautiful day, mostly sunny and 79. Tuesday, clear and 59 into the evening. Wednesday, sunny skies and 80. Wednesday night, partly cloudy and 62. Thursday, mostly sunny and 82. Thursday night, partly cloudy and 64 degrees. And when we start the weekend on Friday, a high of 83 degrees and sunny skies. Friday night, clear and 67. Saturday, sunny and 86 degrees. More on the weather forecast at the bottom of this half hour.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is the 20th day of July. I've had a couple of calls, which is unusual, frankly, so people want to know this information. I'll pass it along, though you'll have to find some of it on your own. Dan Zwicker last Thursday mentioned a couple of places. He will be this week, Wednesday. He will be in Olney at the Holiday, not the Holiday Inn, but I think it used to be the Holiday Inn. It's just called the Holiday. This is an 11 o'clock start time. There is a lunch. They'd like you to RSVP there, 800-242-1074. So let's see, 800-242-1074. That's Wednesday in Olney at the Holiday. And then on Thursday, he'll be at the new CGB office in Mount Vernon, Indiana. I bet you can all find the number for that. That's the new office for CGB in Mount Vernon, Indiana. There's a 9 o'clock and a 1 o'clock meeting. So if you want to see Dan this week, you can do it Wednesday in Olney at 11 o'clock at the Holiday, or in Mount Vernon at the CGB office, 9 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, and then 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Thursday. On the phone line with us to take up a wicked day in Chicago is Kurt Kimmel. He's from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Kurt, I don't always follow the numbers, so I talked to you this morning, but I didn't bother to look again until just before I went on the air. What the devil happened in the corn market today?
Well, massive commodity fund selling. We went from a short position in the funds, 80, 90,000 contracts, to almost 200,000 contracts long in a short period of time. As of late last week, they were still long about 188,000 contracts. And with previous week's weak reversals down, key reversals down, it tripped some sell programs in here fairly aggressively, especially trading below last week's low. On the day there, well, going to midday, funds sold up about 8,000 contracts, but at the close here, they thought they were estimated sellers of over 17,000 contracts of corn. So that coupled with, ideas we're going to see a steady to slightly improved crop conditions report this afternoon, just generated quite a bit of selling, just a lack of buying interest. One thing to remember on the crop conditions, yes, the Western Belt is good to excellent, but it can only be good to excellent so much. So actual improvement is going to have to be seen here in the Eastern Belt to see that good to excellent category jump if it's going to go higher.
Now, the other thing is that it's there'll be a lot of folks that'll be wondering about that this trade today and whether this market can rebound from it, why it wouldn't rebound. Are you concerned at all about this kind of drop in the marketplace, or do you suppose that it will be just a I don't know, how much concern do you put on today's trade?
Well, I'm fairly concerned, especially if you're long or have crop to sell. Because we could be in a situation like in 93 where the market just, moves lower until September, October, then, when the actual harvest activity takes place and the trade decides, well, let's run her up then. So it's a concern. Technically, it's generating some sell signals. There's going to be some long liquidation, so it's going to be hard to get the momentum indicators back up. When you look at the timing on it, we're due for some cycle lows here into next week. Hopefully they'll come earlier than later, but we're in a situation where it's kind of meltdown type of trade here for a while. Downside, we rallied about 92 cents to the upside, 50% back down to the lows that we made here back in June. It's going to be about 408, 407. So we still got, another 8 to 9 cents down here before the technical trade maybe gets brave enough to kind of support this thing in through here. But right now the mentality in the trade is that there's no fear of a big, big disaster. The average corn guess for yields still hovered in this 163, 164 area, which I believe is too high, but you know, it's just going to take time for them to realize what conditions we have out there.
Yeah, so I was looking at some of the charts. 2013, late last week, was one of them I looked at, only because I had been up to the Andersons facility in that Spencer, Iowa area, the one we talked to Everly, actually, on Fridays. On 2013, they were in that area that year where they had an enormous amount of prevent plant, mostly north of the border there, but a lot of it in that just south of the Minnesota-Iowa border. Although it was really pretty isolated, this July 8 week was the week that she dropped like a rock then, and I guess, I suppose eventually, the market looks at it and says, we're going to have a crop. And I think it thinks we're going to have a bigger one than expected at this point. Should farmers take any action, or do they need just to set aside?
Well, it just depends where you are in your marketing plan and what conditions you have. There's some producers out there that's going to have the best crop ever, and they didn't have a whole lot of problems. You know, so they need to be a little bit more aggressive. They feel like they need to be a little bit more aggressive being seller because they got bushels to work with. Whether those are going to be short in bushels, you got to be a little bit more careful. You know, crop insurance will hopefully kick in, you know, if it's that bad. But I think, you know, the thing is you got to be flexible in your marketing plan and have some staying power. The concern that I have more than the size of the crop or the commodity funds is Asia. I know I've said this a million times, but they're just not stepping forward and being buyers. And I'm fearful that we're losing our time window in here to see them come forward and start buying some grain here for this fall and winter shipments. Because if they don't step up their program, I'm fearful we'll see those purchases move to the southern hemisphere. And that's what we've been losing here over, well, from day one is world export share of the market, and we need to keep the share of the world market that we have, or else we can start seeing the export category and supply and demand sheet sort of offset what we're kind of losing in production.
You mean for soybeans at this point, right?
Particularly soybeans, right, yes, because corn exports, you know, are zero. China, that is.
Right.
Corn exports to Mexico and Taiwan and Japan. But yes, soybeans is the key right there, yes.
All right. Anything else we ought to take up before I let you go for the afternoon?
Well, if one's bullish, the thing you can do in through here is come in and buy the market, but you got to have some staying power. We like buying the futures market here at 416. And at the same time, buy a short-dated September corn put, like a 420, 415 put for 14, 15 cents. That way you're covered. You can get in there and play with the big boys and not worry about big-time margin calls.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Take care.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. I'll read you something from the Farm Doc Daily website posted by Daryl Good just today. You can go find the rest of it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. This is about the consumption of soybeans, old crop to begin with. He says consumption of old crop soybeans remains strong and on track to reach the record levels currently projected. NOPA, that's the National Oil Seed Processors Association, reports the crush of its members for June of 2015 was 20% larger than last year. Crush in July and August needs to be about 7.5% larger than that of a year earlier in order for the marketing year crush to reach the current USDA projection of 1.83 billion bushels. With about 6.5 weeks left in the marketing year, exports need to average just 5 million bushels a week in order to reach the current USDA projection of 1.825 billion bushels. That's less than the 8.4 million bushel average weekly export inspections for the 7 weeks ending last week. Unshipped sales for this marketing year are 94 million bushels as of July 9th. And he says that's a sufficient supply for this year, next year. And this would be the crop that that Kurt was just talking about, the concern about soybean demand centers on potential export for the 2015 crop. USDA currently projects the 15-16 marketing year at 1.775 billion bushels. That's 50 million bushels smaller than the large exports expected for the current year. As of the 9th, USDA reported only 252 million bushels of soybeans had been sold for export for the upcoming year. So here's what most of the traders are worried about. Sales are the lowest level for that date since 2009 and are only about half as large as the level of sales on the date in the previous 3 years. The current new crop sales represent 14% of the projected exports for the upcoming marketing year. In the previous 3 years, sales at this time accounted for something between 25 to 41% of the marketing year. However, it might be important to note that if this 14% level, if you go back further, is what was the norm prior to the last 3 years. So Kurt is concerned and many others are concerned about the export market. You can read more from Daryl Good online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. In today's agricultural news, the Biofuel Trade Group is asking for trade credit extensions. A group of biofuel trade organizations has sent a letter to Senate Finance Committee Chairman Orrin Hatch and Ranking Member Ron Wyden encouraging extension of critical advanced biofuel tax incentives. Those tax incentives include the second-generation biofuel producer tax credit, the special depreciation allowance for second-generation biofuel plant property, the biodiesel and renewable fuel diesel fuels credit, and the alternative fuel and alternative fuel mixture excise tax credit. The letter stated, "We urge you to move quickly to extend expired advanced biofuel tax provisions for multiple years retroactive to January the 1st of 2015. On a related note, Friday, Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa announced he had secured the inclusion of tax incentives for wind energy, biodiesel, and cellulosic ethanol in the bipartisan tax extenders bill the Finance Committee will consider tomorrow. We'll stay in Washington, D.C. for the moment. Senate appropriators have sent the Senate an agricultural spending bill. However, the whole appropriations process could still fall victim to politics this year. Senate Democrats have vowed to hold up individual appropriations bills until the body deals with automatic across-the-board spending cuts that started with a 2011 budget deal. Barring an agreement, individual spending bills could fizzle, leading once again to a kitchen sink catch-all bill that keeps current funding. That did not, however, stop Senate appropriators this past week from okaying an ag spending bill for the next fiscal year. Subcommittee Chairman Jerry Moran on the bill's discretionary side.
This bill that we are reporting today, it's written with an allocation of $20.51 billion. Which is $65 million below the current enacted level. So we were working with an allocation that is less than last year. We have worked hard to invest the taxpayer dollars responsibly, funding programs that provide direct benefits to our farmers and rural communities and supporting programs that provide direct health and safety benefits for all Americans.
Not to be outdone, Democrats offered an alternative to fully fund rural and farm programs. Majority Republicans defeated it. They also turned back a Democrat amendment by Illinois Dick Durbin to boost FDA food safety inspections after numerous food illness outbreaks over several years.
48 million Americans will get sick from foodborne illnesses this year. 3,000 will die. So what I'm suggesting is when the day comes, and I hope it comes sooner rather than later, that we talk about additional money in the non-defense side of the budget, that we put the money that the president requested into food safety. And that's what this amendment does.
The president asked for $109 million to implement the 2010 Food Safety Modernization Act. Durbin says FDA needs $276 million. The ag bill includes just 45 of that. Hey, did you know that the United States Department of Agriculture, the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, has control of one of the world's largest air fleets? In fact, that air fleet belongs to the Forest Service, and drones have been putting it in danger. Drones can be a danger to wildland firefighters. In the last 3 weeks, the presence of private or commercial drones grounded firefighting aircraft 6 times. A drone event in Southern California was, in fact, very costly, says Jamie Anzalone with the U.S. Forest Service.
And in that particular one, the aircraft were shut down for just under an hour. And during that time frame, the fire behavior kicked up and structures were lost.
Anzalone reminds folks that drones are unmanned aircraft systems and that they can endanger firefighters, aircraft, and fire-threatened communities.
Safety depends on understanding what aircraft are out there as well as where those aircraft are operating. So when an unauthorized UAS or drone comes into the airspace, it can really pose a risk.
Drone operators who interfere with firefighting efforts can face FAA, Forest Service, and state penalties. Finally today, President Obama, through the Antiquities Act, has created three new national monuments of more than 1 million acres of public land. The new monuments include, says U.S. Forest Service Chief Tom Tidwell, Berryessa Snow Mountain in California, Waco Mammoth in Texas, and Basin and Range in Nevada.
That these areas are going to be protected in a way that the things we enjoy today from these landscapes, we're guaranteed that we're going to continue to enjoy those, but even more importantly, the future generations are also going to get to be able to enjoy those.
The Antiquities Act was first used by President Theodore Roosevelt in 1906. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's take a look now at the cash grain market. Greg Johnson is here from the Andersons. What a day it's been, Greg. Thanks so much for being with us. Do you get many phone calls there at the Andersons in Champaign?
No, I don't know if people didn't find out about the lower markets or didn't want to find out about the lower markets. But either way, it was not a very busy day today.
What do you think of the move and why?
I think Kurt hit it right on the head when he said fund liquidation. The funds were a record short about 4 to 5 weeks ago, and they went from a record short, not to a record long, but to an extremely long position in such a short period of time following all the rain that we had in June. And I think they just got their quota of corn that they wanted to buy. And with a improving forecast, pollination is occurring in pretty good shape. I think the funds just decided to take a breather for now and try to figure out what the national yield's going to be, and then we can move from there once they get a better handle on what they think is out there or isn't out there.
Are you surprised by the ability of the soybeans to hold a bit stronger in the face of such a dramatic move in both the corn and the wheat?
Yeah, I'm not really surprised. I think the beans, when they get down to $10, you have to be awfully, awfully confident that we're going to have a 46-bushel yield. You know, if you want to sell beans, if we take one or two bushels off of that national yield, the carryout goes from extremely big to kind of snug. And so I think beans can swing quite a bit here until we get that yield figured out, which we may not get figured out until the combines roll.
Man, what's your basis for beans look like today?
New crop beans are 20 under November. Now, old crop beans we're paying 10 over. So there's an inverse in the market. Old crop beans are hard to come by. And so there's a 30 to 40 to 50 cent premium for old crop beans versus new crop beans, depending on which processor you're looking at.
And 20 under doesn't actually sound too terribly bad.
No, it doesn't. And if we have, you know, if you assume that a few acres didn't get planted, a few of the replanted acres aren't going to do very well, and maybe, like I say, shave a bushel or two off of the national yield, you know, there may not be an abundance of beans. So we could have a good carry out, but it won't be near as big as I think is what the USDA is projecting today.
And just your spot month bid for corn.
Nearby corn, 393. Nearby beans, 1009.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Greg Johnson of the Andersons back in 2 minutes.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
It's National Lollipop Day. Racine, Wisconsin claims that it was the first to automate lollipop production, inventing a machine in 1908 to put hard candy on a stick. The machine could make 40 suckers a minute. On this day in agricultural history in 1801, Elisha Brown Jr. pressed a 1,235-pound cheese ball on his farm. He then loaded it onto a horse-drawn wagon and presented it to President Thomas Jefferson at the White House. The giant cheese arrived on New Year's Day in 1802. It measured more than 4 feet in diameter and about 17 inches in height. And it was emblazoned with Jefferson's favorite motto, Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. In 1836, Sir Thomas Clifford Allbutt was born, an English physician. He invented the short 6-inch clinical thermometer. Before this, a foot-long thermometer was used that took 20 minutes to determine a patient's temperature. And in 1851, the first cheese factory in the U.S. to make cheese from scratch was started in Rome, New York by Jesse Williams. He had his own dairy herd, and he purchased more milk from other local farmers to make his cheese. By combining the milk and making large cheeses, he could produce cheese with uniform taste and texture. Before that, companies would buy small batches of homemade cheese curd from local farmers to make into cheese. Each batch of curds producing cheese with wide differences in taste and texture from one another. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
This is the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. John Davis joins us from EarthRisk Technologies out of Chicago, Illinois, to take a look at the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. John, where do you want to start this afternoon?
Well, I think the good place to start is the Midwest, and certainly there's kind of two issues of note. Number one, the question is there any heat, which is certainly a big issue across the far southern U.S., is there any sign of that heat moving northward up into the Midwest? And as has been the case lately, it looks like that heat, for the most part, will stay across the southern U.S., and not move northward into the Midwest. So fringes of the Midwest, you know, places like Kansas and parts of Missouri, even far southern Illinois, at times will get into the heat. But most of the Midwest will have a lack of any extreme heat as we go through the end of the month and also into early August. Mm-hmm. The other issue, of course, is rainfall. And we continue to get, you know, heavy rainfall in parts of the Midwest, certainly not nearly as widespread as it was, let's say, a couple of weeks ago with the major flooding and excess moisture issues across the belt. But there are still some areas that have been on the wet side and are still getting some pretty heavy rains coming up. It looks like for this week that general trend will continue across places like Missouri, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, you know, the Ohio Valley region. And then next week it looks like that area will get a break in the action.
So those areas have been inundated with just a lot of rainfall for the better part of, what, 2 months now, I think.
Well, you go for the south, and it goes back three and a half months for the south and that.
Yeah. So they can't have much of a good crop, I wouldn't think, and not much in the way of prospects at this point. Other places around the planet of concern that you have been watching as well?
Europe is the number one area, and of course they've had a very hot midsummer period across Europe. And one thing that's going to happen over the next week or two is that the hottest and driest conditions, which happen more so in the southwest areas of Europe, France and Spain, for example, are now going to be shifting into southeast Europe, the Balkans, portions of Ukraine. And so the focus of attention of the hottest and driest conditions moves from southwest Europe to southeast Europe. But certainly Europe has had some pretty significant, you know, heat and dryness this summer.
Thanks so much. One final note. Have you been keeping track of China? How's their crop doing?
Well, the crop is doing okay. There's some kind of dryness that's evolving across the northern portion of China without any real heat, but that is an area that is going to be in need of getting some rainfall here coming up. But that is an area to watch as we go through month's end in early August, is dryness across the North China Plain.
Okay, John, thanks so much for taking the time with me today.
My pleasure, Todd.
Mm-hmm. John Davis is with Earth Risk Technologies. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. And just a quick reminder, Dan Zwicker, many of you will want to know, will be in Olney on Wednesday at the Holiday at 11 o'clock and in Mount Vernon, Indiana at the CGB office at 9 and 1 on Thursday. I'm Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.